We are in the 16th chapter of Genesis. It's a relatively short chapter, but there's an awful lot of things that I'd like to go through with you, so that you can, we all can kind of get an idea of the next chapter, which is the names are going to be changed in the next chapter. I'm going to talk about one of the names being changed today, because I think it's very significant that we have a picture of that name change before we go into this 17th chapter. So we need a reader.
Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go in to my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." But Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please." Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from my mistress Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "I will surely multiply your offspring, so that they cannot be numbered for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. And he will be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his kinmen." So she called the name of the Lord, who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing." For she said, "Truly, here I have seen him who looks after me." Therefore, the well is called Beer Lahai Roy. It lies between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar spoke to Abram and bore him a son. Abram called the name of his son, whom Hagar bore, Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him,
Well, actually what happens next is the name gets to be changed. We'll talk about one of the name changes today, so I don't have to spend an awful lot of time next week on that name change. And but anyway, so what is it you see in this chapter? What's unusual, odd, or do you understand it? What do you don't understand? Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. What's your thoughts? There we go. That works better. No one has... Oh.
I guess I don't really follow how Hagar was despising her mistress. Was it Hagar that first felt badly towards Sarai and then Sarai reciprocated?
Right. Why?
I'm curious why.
We'll get to, there is a logical answer to all this in a minute. It's the way it's worded and knowing how it's that society at that particular point in time happened. Any other? Sorry, what?
You said that society?
Yes. We'll talk about that. Sean.
It takes so long next time. It's just really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing what we discover here, because this specific chapter this story has been built up a concept from the place that I come from, where basically this is all about the sin of impatience, not waiting upon the Lord and His promise, forcing the promise of the God gave through Hagar and it the bearing fruit.
Okay.
The fact that they are so impatient, and what occurs to me is the repercussions, and also the repercussions of not being patient and how horrible that can be, and also that, my train of thought, that even now, as we look for Yeshua to return, and as we look at our world spinning out of control, I feel He is asking us again to be patient.
Well, you know, what strikes me in these is that, you know, it's not uncommon for them to think that they're getting old and, you know, speeding along and bearing age. So I know that's probably a double message there, because you're getting old and you're thinking, hey, you know, how am I going to do this? You know, so I think there's a message there, but...
Okay. Oh, yeah, definitely is a message there.
I mean, that would cause...
Very effective and powerful.
Well, yeah, that's they're old, and then it's not uncommon that I would want to do something. I would probably try to hurry the process. Well, I do.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I would hope you'll elaborate on that with the age thing, because it happens numerous times in the events of the patriarchs.
Wasn't Hagar a gift from the Pharaoh when Abraham lied to the Pharaoh to start with?
Yes, same one.
Maybe that was the repercussion.
Repercussions. Okay.
personal opinion. To me, which actually coincidentally we're talking about this later on today, it is one of the many symbols of what happens in this story, in particular regarding Ishmael, is that the first one that comes is not the promised son.
Correct.
And watch that. Because we're, as she pointed out, we're looking for Jesus to come. The first one who comes isn't him. It's the same story. The first one that's supposedly promised, who claims to be on the promised son, isn't the promised
isn't
son.
Isn't the promised one.
But he'll claim it.
Any other comments?
Yeah, what God spoke to Hagar over the son, that he would be a wild man and that his hand
we'll
would...
We'll talk about the wild man, what that really means.
Okay.
Fascinating terminology. Yes. She probably looked it up already. I caught her off guard. I don't know anything about it.
I find it interesting that when the angel, when this messenger from the Lord speaks to Hagar, he doesn't call her Abraham's wife.
Nope.
Or Abraham's concubine, even. Says, you are Sarah's maid.
Okay, we'll talk
so
about
they conspired.
Okay.
To me, it's just like, you know, Sarah says to Abram, I'm going to give you to her as a wife.
Uh-huh.
But God doesn't acknowledge that.
Okay. We're going to talk about the tradition in those days, which is not really that much in our society today in one way, when you really think about it. So let's go to verse 1 first. Why not? Might as well. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, was who born to him no children. She had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. The first thing I want to talk about is Sarai. Now, I know that there have been a lot of translations, and they turn to the meaning of this one as being princess or my princess. Okay? But when you look at the word and you start breaking it down and find out, remember, it's a verb-based language. So you go back and find out, okay, where did Sarai, what does a verb-based Sarai come from? No. We'll talk about the reason why the difference between these two. Her base language means to stretch or to cut or to incise. That's what her name means before it was changed. All right? Keep that part in mind. It comes from the Shin Oresh Oresh. All right? It means to be or to cut. Oh, no, sorry, that's the wrong word. I'm sorry. I'm going too quick on that one. It seems strange that why the Sarai to be connected with this Sarat. Sarat is the base verb on it for her, the name Sarai. It comes down and it says there, it's very fascinating on that terminology. Now why? When you break it down, you find now the name Sarah has a different verb base. The name Sarah has an entirely different verb base. Do you know what her verb base is? Sarah, which means sir or master. Yes.
What lexicon are you using? Because I see her name attached to the verb sar, which is chieftain, captain, ruler, prince.
Correct. I'm talking about the initial very beginning of the verb. The verb on the sarah came from the verb sarat.
What lexicon are you using? What lexicon are you using? Because it's not in my lexicon at all.
It's, okay, the coordinate says 8295. So what does Sarah mean? It means a noble woman. That's the basic word it means, a noble woman. The word Sarah is used throughout the Bible, not just in Genesis, but in other places, even talking about in Esther. Remember the story of Esther? In that verb, it says there, and the noble ladies, this is Sarah. The noble ladies of Sarah, or Saram, Saraham, Harim, Sarot, and a plurality of the noble ones, because that's what the noble ladies are. And in 1 Kings 11:3, he had 700 wives, Sarahs, and 300 concubines. His wives were also took away his heart. Had noble people. They were not just ordinary ones. That's where the word queen comes in. Remember the word queen? We use the word queen. The queen is the word Sarah. Okay. Basically, it comes from the basic noun, or actually verb base. It comes from a person who is responsible, or who is in captain, or ruler, or chief, or general, or governor of some sort. The prince. So now we look at this lady, which seems odd for her to do what she did. Now, she gave something to Abram. What did she give? Now, there's a difference between a concubine and a wife. Is that not true? Now, when Sarah turned over her maid to Abram, guess who Hagar now belongs to? Belongs to Abram. She is no longer having authority over this lady. Abram has the final say-so. He is the one, because now it's his wife. Nobody can take away that authority. Now it's his wife. And she made a really odd statement. You remember what she said? When Hagar was pregnant, what was Hagar's approach to her former boss, Sarai? What was her reproach? Contempt. Because she's no longer under her authority. Whose authority is she under? Abram. Now, it's very careful here. We try to understand her and what was being said. All right? Now, remember, she was, Sarai was restrained or held back. God did not or allow her to have children for a reason. We'll get to that a little later. So, Abram took Hagar to be his wife, not her handmaid anymore. You understand what I'm saying? Very important to know the rules that's taking place. As we go on, we're going to find out something a little bit different. Yes?
Do you think that this is the beginning of the multiple wives thing?
No. It was way back in Genesis chapter 2, I think, chapter 1 or 2. Double wives, it was way, yeah. And it says here that she gave to Abram to be his wife, and he had been living there for 10 years. Now, it's only been 10 years now. What happens between the, and he was, you know, from 75 years old to 85 years old, one of the many things Abram had to go through. He had to go through a war. Right? And what else did Abram had to go through? Huh?
Pharaoh, Egypt.
Right. Gone down there and had that problem with Egypt. And then he's got this Hagar, maidservant. And lo and behold, he's also got wealthy. Right? Got a lot of money. But at the same time, El Elyon came to him through the high priest. And we talked about how, what was Abraham's approach or attitude when he killed the most powerful armies and empire then? What was his thoughts? He won. Listen, I remember the American Empire, American Revolution. They fought the greatest army and navy in the world. And won. Right? And we pride ourselves that we fought the greatest navy on the face of the earth at that time. Lo and behold, what was Abraham's response? He wiped out 5 kingdoms. Less than a year battle. We don't know how long it took. What did he say? You remember? I lift my hand to the creator of heaven and earth. He submitted himself unto God, gave God the complete credit for the entire battle. Remember that? Okay. But now we have this, that when Hagar conceived, and she saw that she conceived, she began to despise what's called her mistress or her lady. By the way, the word lady, it says mistress there. It's in English. We have to go back in history. Even in an American army and during the Civil War, do you know who was able to be called a gentleman? Only those who were officers. The average man in the street could not be called that. It was a title. in 1611. It was a title. Now, we've heard of Lady Di, right? That's a title. Someone in position and power and authority. And so when we look at this old word, mistress, and it means the very same thing of one who is a lady or someone who has responsibility. Now, Sarah didn't lose her ladyship. She just lost her maid. Now, of course, it didn't turn out too good. Hagar, she decided to say something to Abram. What did she say to Abram? Verse 5. What? My wrong? You caused it. Bellany, plain as it is. You're responsible for this woman looking down at me, cursing me, or accusing me. You're responsible, Abram, because you're your wife. Right? And he said, let God judge between you and me. He's going to say, you're held accountable, Abram, for what she's doing and saying to me. Does that sound logical? Now, what was Abram's response? What did he do? He gave her back. He gave her back. In a sense, he, quote, divorced her. And says, now she's your handmaid. Do what you want to do with her. Now, Sarai has the authority and power to do, because now is no longer, is it, Abram's wife. He just gave a bill of divorcement, in a sense. So what did Sarah do? She did harshly with her. That's a nice word, isn't it? What do you think harshly means?
Beat the snot out of her.
Modern terminology. Remember, she's still pregnant. She hadn't born anybody yet. She's still pregnant, right? So it's pretty happened pretty quick, wouldn't you think? Don't ask me. It was 6 months or whatever, but I find it kind of funny. Yeah. To be bruised, to afflict, to oppress, to humiliate, to humble, to put down, become low, and to afflict. Those are all different words, what it says there. Nice little word in English, just harshly. It was a little more than that. I mean, she was the boss, right? Abram was no longer her boss. But, and we'll get the story next week of what took place. Because the son is still Abram's son. It is not Sarai's stepson. It is still Abram's son. Yes?
Well, it just occurred to me that that the Ishmaelites are half Jewish.
Israelite? No, they don't even believe that at all.
Huh?
No, they know they are the sons of Abram. They know that. They don't even call themselves Jewish. They know they're not Jewish. Yeah, we're not born yet. And the Jews weren't born for several, years later. Third generation, fourth generation. Look at 1, 2, 3, fourth generation from Abram. Yeah. So, Melech Yahuwah. That's what Reese says, his angel of the Lord. He says, Melech Yahuwah. And what the word Melech means, has two different meanings. It basically does mean straight, one who sends, gives a message. We say, Melech Yeshua, okay, he's a messenger. Yahshua is a messenger, and he's given us a message, right? So when you read the New Testament, remember, he says, oh, he's the King of Kings. He's a Melech. He's a messenger who's giving us a message. What was the message he came to give?
Salvation.
Huh?
Salvation.
No. Repent, therefore, because the kingdom of God is coming. Okay, that's a messenger. He was actually a Melech in that process of giving a message. It's an old-fashioned word. So we have Melech Yahuwah, means the messenger of Yahuwah. We call it angel of Yahuwah. Well, angel means messenger. Same thing. And then it said something. You return to your lady. Return to your boss. All right? I remember she was one scared young lady. Hagar wasn't a 55-year-old lady. She was very young. Young enough to have children. She wasn't a 30-year-old lady. She probably was down there in years. Daniel.
Based on what we find out in the next few generations, it appears the people of Egypt didn't live as long as the people from Abraham's line. So yeah, not only unlike Sarah and Abraham and their hundreds plus when they die, Hagar, all the other Egyptians, that apparently seems to be a very, very, very old age versus what is normal in their society, which is probably what we would expect in the 60s and 70s.
When she died.
So she's probably, yeah, really young, yeah, in her 30s, give or take.
Yeah. And so now we're at this point, and we have to ask ourselves some questions. What is this angel of Yahuwah saying? I will multiply your descendants exceedingly, so they shall not be counted. Now, didn't God say that to Abram? Now, you see a pattern here? You see a pattern here? Why would Yahuwah, the creator of heaven and earth, say to the angel, I want you to tell Hagar that her son, which is made up, by the way, of 12 tribes, identical to Jacob's in the fourth generation, 12 tribes. We'll find their names, they'll be there in a minute. He says, they're going to multiply. And there are going to be so many of them, you won't be able to count them. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? This is weird, right? Is there a parallel here? Why would he say that? Because of Abraham's son, okay. John?
To me, God is setting up the foundation for what we see on playing right now and on to the end. The two great powers, the Ishmaelites, who are the Arab peoples, versus the descendants of Abraham's other kid, the tribes of Joseph and Judah, if you will.
Okay.
The whole wheat and the tares thing. There's the equal tares to the equal wheat.
And we will get to that point.
But what makes the wheat strong is the tares among them.
We're going to explain why it says in Hebrew here what it's telling us here about this man. What's his name? What's the boy named to be named? Before he was even born? What does his name mean? What is his name? Ishmael. Ish is man. Ish means the word for man. Shema. Okay. El. Man. Literally simple as that. Man, hear Elohim. Man, hear Elohim. That's what his name in simplistic language is all about. So what does it tell us? Man, hear Elohim. So what do you hear here? What are you listening to here? What's happening here in this 16th chapter where the angel said, by the way, the creator of heaven and earth says, man, hear Elohim. What do you think he's saying? I'm literally translating the ish, the very beginning of yeah, the ish is man. And it's also a combination of the shim, S-H-M. That's how Hebrew works. Okay, it's what they call those nomenclature type like thing. And El means God. Now, let's continue on with this thing, because the angel keeps on saying something very interesting. Basically, oh, great, you could reverse that thing that Elohim will hear. Also mean, remember God says, I will not hear you unless something happens first. You listen to him. He's very clear of that in the prophets. I will not even hear your statement if you don't hear me first. We have a double message here in his name. I will hear you, man, hear me. So now we have a story. What is God saying? Verse 12. A funny word. He shall be a wild man. What is a wild man? His hand against every man. Okay. And every man against him. Okay. And he shall dwell in the face of all his brethren. No, I know your verse might say presence. He's in their face. Put it literally. So now we see why. Something very fascinating here. His name, or this wild man name, Ammon, Adam, Ammon, okay? And if I get this right, Pa-ora, which literally means fruitful. Wild fruit. It's fruitful, but it's wild. Okay. When we use the word wild man, we use the English 21st century font. This is written in the 16th century. So what is he saying about this wild man? It's producing fruit. What kind of fruit is it producing?
Does that have anything like is that like a wild vine that is just untrimmed, untaught, untrained? It's not so much that like we would think crazy, but like a wild grapevine, and that's brought up in the New Testament of what wild vines just kind of go crazy and don't know what they're doing.
They just go all over
the wild olive branch, a wild this, wild that.
They're fighting, though.
Something is not. God said something about it. We need to know what he said, why he said it, because God established this. Ishmael didn't establish it. God did. But Ishmael didn't born yet, but God established it.
He called it.
Go ahead.
Well, to me, I think it would be without boundaries and out of control.
All right. You're getting close to it.
I think of wild vine, it's going to choke out whatever's around it.
Choke out whatever's around it. Now, this is in the face of, or in the presence of, his brethren and people. Yes.
Yeah, when I was doing a word search on it, it actually has reference to another verse where that word is used for wild donkey.
Yes.
Jeremiah 2:24.
Yes.
Which actually...
She's going ahead on me, but that's good. Keep going.
And I'm reading this from the New American Standard Version where it says, a wild donkey accustomed to the wilderness that sniffs the wind in her passion. In the time of her heat, who can turn her away? All who seek her will not become weary. In her month, they will find her. And I So that's what, that's another verse where that exact same word is used.
In the case for wild in general, a wild plant or a wild animal, their basic premise that makes them wild versus domesticated, the concept is that domesticated, whether it be plant or animal, produces something that you want. Wild produces very little of what you want.
Okay.
So if it's a wild man, of the good things will be very little. Versus a domesticated, of the good things will be very great. That's usually the main distinction. If you go for a wild plant versus a cultivated, there is a night and day difference on what one produces versus the other produces. It doesn't matter how well it's fertilized, makes no difference. The wild is actually distinctly different.
Okay. What she was reading here, there's a thing called a wild donkey. Or it's called, in the other English, it's another language. But nonetheless, it's always called a wild donkey, a donkey that's wild. What is a wild donkey? Untamable?
Yes.
Okay. What would you picture a donkey that's not been tamed? What does a donkey do that's not tamed? What?
Stumbling.
No, that's a mule. That's a crossbreed. Don't get those things confused. I can't remember. I meant to write it down. I think it's in Jeremiah or in Isaiah. Where it's talking about the wild donkey that consumes spirit. Consumes the wind. Now, what does that mean? All right, now let's get a little closer. I don't want to take too much more time here. Like a donkey that is not tamed, Ishmael, not put under Abram or Isaac. He was to be set free on his own. How do we know he was just set free on his own? Well, next chapter tells us what happened. All right. So, let's go back to one more name. What does Hagar mean? What does Hagar mean? It's a mother. What does his mother's name mean? Flight. Running. Fleeing. From under the hands of her mistress, the one that's in charge. We get in the next chapter, which we won't go in today, but remember, she's the one that said, get rid of her. Now, Abram didn't have much problem because it was her maid. But she says, her and... All of a sudden, that did upset Abram. He didn't want to do that. That's his son. How could he cast his son? 13 years of age or plus? How could he cast his son away? That's probably a little older than that. How could he throw his son? How could he cast his son out with just a bare minimum? Remember I said to you? The wild man is like a donkey that's not been tamed, and Ishmael is going to be a man that will not be under the jurisdiction of Abram nor Isaac. Even though they were brothers, Isaac had more power, had more wealth, and more jurisdiction. Ishmael was set free with his mother to flight. You're on your own. We will get to that point on her in the next chapter. I believe it's the next chapter. But so we're looking at this picture and we're saying, oh, this is fantastic. Now, why did God make that message? Was he telling her? Was he telling us about Ishmael?
This What age was Ishmael?
When he was cast out?
Yeah.
It's around, you know, the circumcision was on the date. I think he was 2 years old, I think. Isaac was 2 years old. So it's probably 15 years old or 16 years old, something of that range. I'd put that in that particular category. Okay. He's a teenager, not yet a full man, but on his way. So now we're at this dilemma, right? What is this wild donkey? Why is he called a wild donkey? And his bond, he wasn't born in the womb wild. You remember about the, we're not there yet. When Rebecca had the two kids, neither one of them knew what was right or what was wrong. And there had been a doctrine, oh yeah, but in the womb one was mad, nasty, and that one wasn't kind, he was humble. That's not what it says. He says neither one of them knew anything about good and bad. I chose this one over the other one. So did God make a choice here? What choice was he after? Was Ishmael born by mistake? Was Ishmael born because they decided they need to do the job because God's not doing the job, so they're going to do the job? Or did God have something for us to see and understand way in the future that we are so not inapt to, we can't understand it because we don't have the mind of God saying, I am going to bring about my will. Is this a story of God's will or is a story of Abram's will, Hagar's will, Sarah's will? Yes.
And God needed two goats, not one. One gets kicked out.
He said he will always be fighting. When someone's always at constant bickering, at anger. Let's look at the Arab world, just Arab world, not Muslims world, the Arab world. And what do they always do? They are always fighting amongst themselves. A lot. All right? And so, where did this all come from? Did God have something in mind? Or is this just a story of, look what happened and God had to tolerate it? Or is God saying, I'm telling you something. My will is going to be done. I could have made Hagar barrenness, but I didn't. I made Sarai barrenness. Oh, why did you make her barrenness? Teaching them what? What is God teaching us? One is by flesh, the other is by promise. Go ahead.
One of the things that not only is he making a play here and all of the characters in the play are going along for the prophecies and other stories that he's putting forth, but it also tells us, don't be so sure that all of the tumbling of events that we watch are totally outside of God's awareness.
Right.
That a lot of times he sets us up and we're in a mess, and then he rescues us from the mess we were in.
I'm trying to find it. The book of Galatians, where the Apostle Paul explains the whole thing. Right offhand, I lost my location. Where that's at. About 4? Yeah. I should have got that down in my notes, but I didn't. Four, verse five. For liberty. Okay, it's verse chapter 4. Yeah, okay. And he says now, verse 24, chapter 4, and these things are symbols. Symbolic What symbols? What's symbolic? The events that took place in the 16th chapter and 17th chapter is telling us something. Is it a mistake? Or is God saying to us, through the Apostle Paul, this is what it's all about? All right, what's it all about? For these are two... What? Covenants. Oh. Was there a covenant made? Who was... Yeah. There was a covenant made. And he fulfilled, God's going to fulfill the two covenants, he said. Now, did you notice there was a covenant back there? It came from Yahweh. It came from the creator of heaven and earth. The angel came and said, this is what God said. So he made a covenant with Ishmael before he was even born and told him, this is what you will call him and this is what he's going to be. Wow. Now we're at a different covenant. Did you ever notice there was a covenant with God, with Ishmael? It was right there in the 16th chapter, right? There's a promise covenant. He's going to keep it. You won't be able to number them. You won't be able to count them. That's an agreement with God. Made with Ishmael before he even was born. Did you notice that? So let's continue on. He said two covenants. And now he reverses it for a reason. One of the Mount Sinai, which was given birth to bondage, which is Hagar. What? Mount Sinai? Bondage? How is the story here in the 16th chapter and 17th chapter, we'll get you in next week, how is that a picture of or paralleling with Mount Sinai? The Ten Commandments. What is it that is so different between the two? What is it he telling us? What is the Apostle Paul trying to explain to us? Was the covenant at Mount Sinai a free covenant or one that was bound you? The minute they transgressed that covenant, they were now in bondage. Simple as you can imagine. They became in bondage when they made that calf. Okay? Yes.
Well, that put all of them under a death penalty. If you disregarded what was there, you were automatically under a death penalty. That's pretty bad bondage.
Okay, now, what about the other covenant? He says there's two of them here. He said there's two. Did you read it? You go back there and Galatians and the fourth chapter, and he says about two covenants. What was the other one? What was the other one?
The other one is, of course, the new covenant, Richard. The real covenant.
What agreement was that? What covenant was that agreement about? What was the second covenant agreement about? Oh my. Jeremiah 31. All right. I will not do as I did before. This is the second covenant. This is the covenant that matters. I'm not going to lead them out like I did. I am just going to write it in their mind and in their heart. What was the price for God to write it into my mind, into your heart, into your soul? What was the price? Did I pay anything?
No.
No. As a promise. A promise. Now, when the 17th chapter we get in there, we find a promise. A promise was given. And God upheld that promise by an impossibility on the fleshly word of life. No way could those, Abram, and no way could, he started reading the 17th chapter, 100 years old. Anyway, at that point in time, he couldn't reproduce. There was no more in him. Right? And he was the first one who laughed at the message. We will go through there. He's the first one who laughed at the Melech Yahua, at the angel of God, when he said, "It'll be out of you and from your wife." He laughed. And then, of course, they came by a little later, and that Melech Yahua came and said, "Sarah's going to have a child the next time I come by." And what did she do? Laughed to herself, of course. And he said, "What are you laughing about?" "Oh, me? No, I didn't laugh." Because ask yourself a real question. When you really look at what's called the covenant, that is the covenant of bondage, is there hope of salvation within that covenant? Once you have transgressed it, there is no hope. That's what Apostle Paul talks about in Galatians. The Torah is going to demand payment. Simple as that. Now we're coming into this point. We see in Hagar, we see this message that's given to a promise, a covenant given to Ishmael. Is there hope for Ishmael? Oh, really? Was there hope for me? Even though I didn't know God? Yeah. A heathen was promised eternal life before I even knew what it meant. What do you mean? Was I one of those blessed ones that really repented to God at age one? Maybe 6 months? Maybe 3 days? Maybe on the eighth day? Oh, no. No. I'm just as much as a wild man. Untamed, unfruitful. If I'm producing fruit, it's not good fruit. It's fruit of what the tree must either do when things bring forth what? Good fruit or bad. It cannot bring forth both. It will be cut down and destroyed. That's what the Messiah said, right? So maybe it doesn't seem like there's any hope. But there's a covenant made. And it's going to happen. It's happening to you and happening to me and happening to thousands and millions of people around the world in time past. And the second covenant was, "O barren, rejoice. You who do not bear," and she didn't bear, "break forth and shout. You who did not travail, give birth pains. For the desolate has many more than she who has a husband." Is that the message you see there? So this is not a story of Hagar and Sarah, or Sarai, making and Sarai saying, "Okay, you know, Abram, this didn't work. It's supposed to be from you. Tell you what, why don't you have that, get this child, and I'll adopt it. We'll kind of play a little game here. And then we present this to the God and say, this is our son." And God said, "No, I reject it." All right? We'll see that in the next chapter. So we can dream up or think of how dumb, foolish, idiotic, faithlessness, doubt. We can bring forth all sorts of thoughts about how dumb these two old people are for not trusting God. We can do that because it's so simple on the earth. So simple looking at it and you read it and says, "Boy, you know, if I was there, I would never do that." All right? "If I was Sarai, I would never do that. If I was Abram, I would never take her as my wife." Right? Because you're more brilliant. I'm more brilliant. We're smart. We have this wonderful thing called, we call it insight. We have wonderful hindsight, which gives us insight. God gives us his hindsight, so we have insight. It doesn't come from any other pattern or any other method, right? Now, have you paid it? Did you understand what I'm saying so far today? This story is not a story of a wild man. It's a story of a covenant. Two of them. This one come first. It's not of the promise. Any other questions? The name of the well is basically translated the well of the living Elohim. The well of the living of Elohim. What is well? What does well hold? Water. You mean God is like water? Is God like water? Is he like water? Yes! That's what he is. He's like water. Water does a couple things for you. When you're thirsty, it quenches it. And the other blessed thing about water is, when you're dirty, it cleans you up. Literally. Soap is no good without the water. So, when you see these things, and you understand, I hope you understand a little bit more about the story behind the story, or what God leads up into a point, and there is a point of where is this story going? It's not going into a history, saying, look what the history of what two people, a third lady, was involved in, which was transgressing the will of God. No, it's not. This is God telling us something. I want you to hear. Remember, his name has a double meaning. Man, hear Elohim. Literally translated, the first part of the name is man, the middle part of the name is here, and the last part of his name is Elohim. We can't reverse it. Oh, no. Elohim, here's man. No. That's not how it's worded. Man, here, Elohim. Does that make sense to you? So we want to kind of reverse it around a little bit because we want to make God look like he is always bending his ear down to everything we say, or everything we pray about, everything we beseech. He's bending his ear down to hear us. But he says, no. You hear me first. Then I'll hear you. When you hear him first, what are you supposed to do? What does Shema mean? Hearken unto him and respond. Just do it. Then he'll hear you. Yes.
So, is this happening?
Is what happening?
Are the Ishmaelites hearing Elohim?
He's always to be in the face of his brethren. Who was his brother? Isaac. He's always going to be in the face of Isaac. Does that make sense? Always going to give Isaac trouble. And the descendants trouble. Had to have descendants and descendants and descendants of trouble in the face of the sons of Isaac. Children of Isaac. How many children Isaac have? Two. Yes.
Won't the children of Ishmael, though, eventually have to come to face the fact that the God of Abraham, Isaac,
just
and Jacob
as
is
much,
still there?
Just as much as any
we do.
Heathen, pagan,
right.
Christian, Jewish, regardless, have to face the reality of truth. Now, I have to go to the Word of God and find out what that truth is. If we don't understand the truth, you know what you're supposed to do? What did James say? Ask. Ask. He didn't say, go ask the preacher. Go ask the teacher. Go ask the rabbi. You ask God. That's where you go. Don't go to some big name or small name, me, about what God has to say. Just go to the Word. It's clearer. It's better spoken. Yes.
It should be remembered that in Galatians, I think everybody gets it, but Paul is addressing Jews. He's not addressing the children of Ishmael.
Correct. No issue. I'm not disagreeing with you on that one. I'm just telling you about the product of what the story way back in Genesis 11 and 17, 16 and 17 is addressing. It's addressing two covenants. Now, if you were even, I'm sorry, you make a Jew. I'm thinking, I'll put more blunt with you. I think he was not just addressing the Jews. I think addressing every person who thinks they are of the house of Israel. Because they all were given the same thing. All right, even those who joined themselves with Israel and became Israelites, it's them as well. Because the word came to them. That's my thinking. I get a hug from the caller sometimes. I'm not disagreeing with what you want to think of. I'm just telling you what I see.
He goes on in chapter 5 and addresses circumcision. So really what he's saying is that you're not going to find salvation in Judaism.
You're not going to find salvation in the Torah. That's what this is telling us. He said it. There is nothing there. The law cannot bring forth salvation. The Torah cannot bring forth salvation. It is just a way to live. Just a way how you should live your life. That's it. But it's not about salvation. It's about a promise. Period. Point blank. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, somebody's going to say, man, he's speaking against the Torah. Richard's an anti-Torahist person. I'll tell you, you should obey and respond to the Torah, the law. Understand it and do it and live by it. Because Paul says, that's what you should live by. Right? Simple as that. In the book of Romans, he said, you live by this. We are to establish the Torah. We are supposed to put it part of our life. We're supposed to put part of our being, part of our existence. But he said, it's not going to save you. It's just going to tell you how you should live. The Torah also tells you how God will forgive you. A promise by their certain sacrifices, especially the sacrifice of the goat. It was there for a reason, for us to understand.